It's time for This Week in WordPress, episode number 331, entitled Woof. It was recorded on Monday, the 21st of April, 2025. My name's Nathan Wrigley, and I will be joined by three fabulous guests. I'm joined by Mark Westgard. I'm joined by Wendy, whose surname I can never pronounce, so I'm just going to say Wendy. But also, I'm joined by Steve Burge. We're here to chat about WordPress because it's a WordPress specific project, and we do rather a lot of that. We mentioned the Page Builder Summit, which is coming around. We also mentioned the fact that WordPress 6.8 is going to be the only major release of WordPress. What does this mean for WordPress? And what do we think about minor updates in the year to come? There's a bunch of performance improvements, which we mention as well. And also we get into events like WordCamp Europe. But the significant amount is all about AI and what have we done to ourselves? What will AI do to the web development industry in the near future? So that's where most of our endeavours lie this week. I hope that you enjoy it. It's all coming up next on This Week in WordPress. This episode of the WP Builds podcast is brought to you by GoDaddy Pro, the home of managed WordPress hosting that includes free domain, SSL and 24/7 support. Bundle that with the Hub by GoDaddy Pro to unlock more free benefits to manage multiple sites in one place, invoice clients and get 30% off new purchases. Find out more at go.me/WPBuilds. And by Bluehost. Redefine your web hosting experience with Bluehost Cloud. Managed WordPress hosting that comes with lightning-fast websites, 100% network uptime, and 24/7 priority support. With Bluehost Cloud, the possibilities are out of this world. Experience it today at bluehost.com/cloud. And by Omnisend. Do you sell your stuff online? Then meet Omnisend. Yes, that Omnisend. The email and SMS tool that helps you make 73 bucks for every dollar spent. The one that's so good, it's almost boring. Hate the excitement of rollercoaster sales? Prefer a steady line going up? Try Omnisend today at omnisend.com. This Week in WordPress, we're on episode number 331. It's hanging together by a thread. Yeah, but that's the way we like it. I am joined today, as I always am, by three fabulous guests. Let's start over here. Let's go. Where is he? There he is. That's Mark Westgard. Hello, Mark. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Yeah, good. Hopefully my... Oh, yeah, Wendy, go on. Try it. It's so nice. Wendy is currently trying to point in the right direction. And isn't it crazy how difficult that is? Like, all is. You've got to do is...
Well, it's tapping your head and rubbing your belly.
Yeah. But as soon as you realize you're pointing in the wrong direction, all you've got to do is swap it around. But that is so hard. Yeah, exactly. Anyway, there's Mark. Mark joins us as today's co-host. He is, of course, the founder of WS Form. And I'll just read the bio. It's very short. Mark is the founder of the WordPress Form plugin, WS Form. He regularly checks Lost and Found to see if Bob has been found. Any luck this week?
It never changes. That's the same bio I've had for many, many months.
It's okay.
I'm still looking for Bob.
Yeah, it's just nowhere to be seen. But thank you for joining us. Really appreciate it. Let's see if I can get this one right. There's Wendy. I got it right. How are you doing, Wendy?
I'm all good. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. Oh, look, Mark, so good.
Oh, amazing.
I practiced before and I went that way.
Yeah. Wendy discovered WordPress in 2009 and turned her passion into a profession in 2011 as a freelancer. She's been active as a contributor to the WordPress community, attending various WordCamps as a volunteer speaker and MC. In 2024, she served as one of the lead organizers for WordCamp Europe and is currently co-leading the communications team for the event 2025 professionally. Wendy works as a WordPress product market expert at one.com. And when she's not working with WordPress, she is actively involved with, I'm going to say the English, which is Love Doctor. How do you say that in Dutch?
Liefdesdokter.
Okay, that word, which is a learning collective dedicated to fostering interpersonal connections in all its forms. So what is that then? So Love Doctor, obviously I'm reading the translation. What is it? What does that mean?
So it's, yeah, the company is called Love Doctor. And what we do is we are invited to events, workshops, walk around in, we have like, we dress up like nurses and doctors and we help people connect to themselves and to each other and to, well, whatever bigger thing they want to connect to.
Oh, nice.
I'll share an example. We did a big event last week on Wednesday. It was a startup festival at a school. So the candidates who were graduating that this year, they all needed to create a startup business. And they had a festival to present all those small businesses. And we were part of that. And we had people step into the light with their talents and their qualities. And they had to stand on a block. And we had like these big spotlights. We shone, I don't know, the past sense of that word. But we put them in the light, literally, by shining lights on them, big spotlights. We had those with us and to make them feel special. And it is a really nice thing to do. We are a small business. We work with volunteers. We currently have 38 volunteers in our, well, it's called a learning collective. So, yeah.
Wow. Ooh. Wow. That is so cool. That's so interesting. What a great. So you show up at events and basically just sort of try to draw people out of themselves and make them feel comfortable and confident and happy.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so great. And it's called Love Doctor. And again, say it in Dutch again. What is it?
Liefdes Doctor.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. What a great idea. Thank you for...
Is it aimed at kids? Is it aimed like 100% at kids or everyone?
No. It's aimed at adults. And the graduates are adults. So they are young adults, but they are still adults. It's not like a high school. It's a college.
I'm going to tell you the opposite story. When I was a bit younger, I
watched and leave one year.
And there was this van driving around, and there were these people surrounding the van who were just going around, like pointing at people and laughing, shouting at them. And then as that drove away, painted on the back, it said insecurity van. And in the UK, a van was all about, like, you know, we have the thing and it's got a security van and it's where they, you know, you put the money to take to the banks. And so these guys decided to do the insecurity van and just made people feel really uncomfortable. So, yeah, I can imagine each other, you guys cancelling them out. But anyway, there you go. Apropos of absolutely nothing. Our third guest, there he is, Steve Burge. Hello, Steve.
Hey.
Nice to have you with us. Steve has gone for possibly the shortest bio we've ever had. And it just says founder at Publish Press. So there you go.
Yeah, I didn't know how much you wanted.
Yeah, no, it's fine. That's totally fine. But go on. As you've saved us a bit of time on the bio, just tell us about Publish Press.
Oh, well, I'm English. I live in Florida. We have a company called Publish Press. We do publishing plugins, help newspapers, magazines, universities, governments, anyone that wants to take care of their... If you want to do something more than just hit publish after you've put your thoughts on the page, if you want to be a little more careful about it, we have plugins that enable you to have approval processes or workflows or to be more careful before you hit that publish button.
You have a free version. Well, you have a free tool, and I think it's called Publish Press Future, which I use all the time, and it will unpublish something at a certain date. So I don't know, you might want to publish something for only 6 weeks or something like that, and it just sends it into a different state. So I would thank you for that. I use that absolutely all the time. It's around Black Friday when we do those deals, you know, and they always have a sort of an expiry date. So I publish them and then automatically say, okay, stop showing at a certain date. Anyway, there's our panel, Wendy, Mark, and Steve Burge. Really appreciate it. If you want to join us, feel free. In the UK today, we have this thing called a bank holiday. And so most of the people that would join us from the UK are probably out at the beach, you know, pretending to have a nice time because it's about 4 degrees or something like that, eating an ice cream whilst freaking out because it's so cold. But anyway, if you are joining us from the UK, thank you for taking the time. Just a couple of things I'll raise on the screen. If you want to join us and spread some love and some comments and things like that, send people here. It's under Mark's chin. WPBuilds.com. Thank you. WP. Yeah, look at that, a pro. WPBuilds.com/live. Send people and you can comment. And if you make a comment, we would really appreciate that. It kind of drives the show along a little bit. And we've had one here from Wendy, for all Dutch people interested, I guess.
Yeah, I shared the link, but apparently it's not.
Maybe it strips out the links. Don't know. Yeah, I'm not entirely sure whether it does that. If you put it into the private chat, I could probably just raise it as a page or something like that. But is that the Love Doctor thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, go on. There's a little underneath the in the system that we're using. There's something called private chat. Can you see it on the right? And yeah, if you post the link in there, I'll find it in a minute and we'll put it on towards the end of the show. We're also saying hello. Oh, those comments are not being very nice, are they? Let me just see if I can make that a little bit easier, because look, they are blocking people's faces out. Let me see if I can.
I'm going to wave my chair.
No, look, there you go. Fixed it. Cammy McNamara is saying hello. Hello, friends. Up early and working already in the prep for a couple of days off at PressCon. Yeah. Press conference happening this week. We've mentioned it loads and loads of times, and as it's just about round the corner, I haven't really got anything in for this week, but hope you have a nice time. Seems like the great and the good in the WordPress community are going, so that'll be really nice. Okay, let's get stuck into the bits and pieces for this week. You know, the usual self-promotional stuff. Apologies about that. Here we go. First bit is our website, wpbuilds.com. If you want to you know, subscribe to what we're doing and keep updated, just put your email address into this little box and click subscribe. And then we'll send you a couple of emails a week. One, when we repurpose this conversation we're having now, I'll send it out tomorrow morning as an audio podcast. And, you know, the links that we touch on and all of that will be in there. But also the Thursday podcast that we produce each week will come to you on a Thursday. And here is a list of the ones that we've done recently. Look at this little chap here. Very nice. Nice.
He's got his head cut off again.
Yeah, he's got his head cut off. Yeah. I deliberately tried to make Mark, you know, as insignificant as possible in these pictures. So Mark and I have done the Nice Show recently, which was nice. Let's just say that. And then I did an episode with Sherry Hullab as well. And she was talking about using custom fields to build websites. And sort of an interesting approach, let's put it that way. So you'd get all the information about that. But also, I don't know if you've noticed, behind me is a logo for this little thing. It's called the Page Builder Summit, and it's happening not that far away now. It is from the 12th to the 16th of May, 2025. It's totally free. If you want to watch the bits and pieces that people have submitted, and if you scroll down, you'll be able to see a little bit more about who's contributing this year. Look, here they all are. There's loads of them. Oh, look, there's Cammy.
Yay.
And a bunch of other people. So they're all contributing, and it'll be free for 48 hours, so plenty of time to watch it. And if you want to be kept updated, put your email address and name into that little box there, and we will let you know when all of the schedule and everything is properly released. But as you can see, it's, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks away now. Getting quite excited. All the work actually starts at this point. We've got lots and lots of editing work to do and things like that, so it'll be keeping me very, very busy. PageBuilderSummit.com. And one last thing from me probably is I'm co-organizing the WPLDN, the meetup that we do in London, all centered around WordPress. And if you are in the UK and you fancy coming along, that's great. It happens at the final Thursday of each week. So it's happening this Thursday, each month, sorry. It's happening this Thursday. But if you fancy speaking and being a part of the event, you can go to wpldn.uk/speak. And you can fill out the form there and you can see the dates that are available. We've got a few different ones. The red ones are full, but the other ones need speakers. And so we'd really appreciate that. wpldn.uk/speak. One of the things
that
we're doing.
And you don't have to be in the UK to apply, right? You
can. No. I guess we always have people live in the venue. So there would have to be, I guess, some sort of commitment to get on a plane or a ferry or whatever. But London's so well connected and often really not that expensive to book flights in and out of. So yeah, have a look. No, there's no embargo on where you're from. It's just, you know,
You need to be in London at
you do.
The time.
You need to be in London
event.
For that. That's right. Exactly that. Yeah.
I'm going to be there just before the event. I was
Are
checking
you?
The calendar. Yeah.
Is that deliberate?
You're just,
yeah. Yeah.
Boris didn't want to see you.
No, I can well understand. Anyway, there we go. So let's move on. And what we're starting to do now is the people who come on, our panelists, so Wendy, Mark, Steve, they get the opportunity to share a few bits and pieces if they wish to. And Mark shared a couple of things. Firstly, we mentioned this last week, but Mark will mention it again. This is WS Form. This is Mark's Form plugin. And growing in popularity all the time. And you've got a deal on at the moment. How much? It looks like 20%. Is that 20% on all off, the yeah. things? Yeah.
All the things, 20% off, coupon code SPRING20. Simple nice. As that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So wsform.com, you can check it out there. And mm-hmm. how long? How long have we got before we've got to redeem that?
I haven't put an end date on it yet. I guess when spring ends.
Yes. When is that?
Yeah, I have no idea. Yeah.
Go now. Go today before it runs out, as Mark suddenly discovers spring.
Limited time offer.
I had somebody submit a deal to my deals page yesterday, and in massive letters on the images for the deal, because they have to submit a promotional image, it says limited time, but they didn't supply an end date, which I was going to use Steve's plugin for. So I wrote an email back to them and said, when does it run out? He said, never. I said, why did you put that? You actually took the time to put limited time offer in the image. But anyway, so they fixed that, and it'll be coming up. Right, okay. And then this came from you. Now, we touched on this a bit last week, but I'm not clever enough to really understand what's going on here. But Mark's raised this one, and kind of related to it, a Cloudflare page, which we'll come to in a moment. But this is speculative loading, which has landed in 6.8. Now, my understanding, Mark, you can correct me, is basically some wizard inside your computer is standing there constantly worrying about which page you're going to click on next and makes decisions about what you're going to load next, so preloads it. Actually, that's the bit. I genuinely don't know what the trigger is to make things load. So tell us more.
Well, it uses a thing called the speculation rules API, which is it's actually a draft spec right now, but there's a lot more to it. But essentially what it is, there's a script tag on your page, and it tells the browser what type of content can be either prefetched or preloaded. So a prefetch is where it will go off and get the content from the server, and it will just hold on to it until it's ready to use it. And then there's also pre-render, where it'll actually fetch the data and render it in the background, but won't show the user. And it's kind of interesting how it works. There are different what are called eagerness levels. Now, I know you're quite eager, Nathan. So
yeah.
I'm trying to think what I think it uses conservative
I think
eagerness.
The WordPress implementation is on the sort of like don't go loading everything more side as opposed to just load all the things. Yeah,
I actually experimented with it to see what it was doing, and the way they've got it set up currently is if you click on a link, actually the mouse down event, it is loading that page. It's requesting that page immediately. So by the time you've released your mouse button, that content was probably loaded. And there are more eagerness levels. So you can actually do it so that it'll prefetch the data as you're hovering over a link as well. You can even preload, prefetch content as the page loads. So you could say, right, if I've got a three-page site, let's load the other two pages anyway in the background. So you've got the positive side of that is the user gets a much faster experience. The downside is if you're on kind of shared virtual hosting and you don't have any kind of CDN or caching on the front end, that can cause a lot more load on the server. If you've got bandwidth levels and things like that, or limits, then that can cause you issues. But it's cool. So in WordPress 6.8, the speculative loading is enabled by default. It is on that eagerness level of
conservative, I think.
Conservative,
was. Yeah, something like that.
So it's going to load stuff when you on a mouse down event when you click on a link. And there's some other rules in there as well. So it only does it on certain types of content. There's a bunch of hooks that you can use to disable this or make it more eager or configure other parts of it. But it's cool. I would recommend definitely using it with a service like Cloudflare, like a content delivery network, so that you've got them actually serving the pages that get loaded in the background.
Yeah, let's load that up in a minute. But that's really fascinating. So so there's a measurable difference between, like, there is some measurable moment between the push on the mouse and that, just that little tiny amount of time between the click and then the release is enough to sort of begin the loader and it to make a difference. I mean, that just seems seems almost and impossible to imagine.
Yeah, I think further down this article somewhere they mention the, see the LCP rate there goes down by like 2% or something, which on a big, big site can be quite significant.
Yeah, no kidding.
But then if you go to the next article about Cloudflare, so they've got a different system. It's similar to this. This is quite fascinating. So what it does is it actually analyzes how people are moving through your website and will preload content based upon behavior.
Oh, that's so really smart. Yeah.
So if you, and I haven't gone into this in any great detail, but what it's doing is it's saying, okay, if this person, let's say this person clicks on support on your website, it may say, okay, 20% of people are always going to this article. So it would look prefetch that article for you. Automatically. So this is more dynamic. So this is actually based upon user behavior and doesn't just prefetch the same stuff all the time or as you're hovering over a link. Right. And this is actually a free service provided by Cloudflare. So you can, if you've got Cloudflare on the front of your site, you can enable this and get it going straight away.
I think it's just a toggle, isn't it? Don't you just click? Don't you just toggle one setting on and it just sort of takes care of it? Yeah. I mean, it's pretty incredible, really. So the WordPress version is really clever, but quite a blunt instrument in that it's, you know, it's waiting until something is happening. Either you could make it so that it was on hover, but typically it's on click at the moment, mouse down or what have you. But the Cloudflare is making decisions based upon past interactions with your web property. So it knows that 50% of people end up over there. We might as well. Just crack on and load that. I think this is all really fascinating. I'm just waiting for the moment where AI gets involved and it basically figures out every link that I'm going to click in 2025 and just
it
preloads.
Just gets you to the takes you to the article that you want to even think about it.
Yeah, I just open up my browser and it just goes, this is there's your year ahead. There's 2025.
So for like core web vitals with this, I know there was a question in the
let's put that up now. Does this, so this is WebAlogic. Hello, WebAlogic. The question is, how does the prefetch feature affect Core Web Vitals? Do you know, Mark?
So it'll speed up rendering of a page, basically, particularly pre-render. So prefetch is going to go off and get the data, and then the browser hasn't rendered it yet, but it's not going to have to make that request to the server to get the page. So the load time is a lot quicker. With pre-render, it's actually rendering that page in the background. You can't see it, but when you go to it, bang, the page is there.
Wow.
So, you know, things like CLS, like layout shift and stuff are vastly reduced. That. So, but yeah, it does, obviously it puts more load on your client. And if you don't have a CDN or anything like that in place on the front end, then you're going to be putting a lot more load on the hosting provider that you've got.
Right. Because you might be loading three pages instead of one.
I mean, this essentially, you know, is putting a lot more load on the internet overall. Because
That was going to be my criticism. Let me just take that page off. We don't really need to see that anymore. That was going to be my criticism, actually. I wondered what the environmental impact was. You know, the fact that we're always worrying about the environment and the internet recently has been under the microscope as being, I think the internet, if memory serves, is the seventh largest country on earth in terms of pollution. You know, if you
thought it was the third.
Oh, okay. That could well be me getting it wrong. So thank you, Wendy. But the point being, it's significant. The internet is like a giant country. And if we suddenly all just toggle that switch, maybe in the Cloudflare case, there's sort of cleverness going on, which means it won't do certain things. But on the WordPress end, with its less clever for inverted commas word, that's a thing I suppose we need to be mindful of. But
I think that they've made a good decision by putting it on a moderate level on the eagerness, because it just means nothing's gonna load unless you're, you know, intending to click on something.
Okay.
They do have the filters to up that, but excuse me.
It's okay. So a reply to Weber Logic was from Andrea. I'm not entirely sure how to pronounce your surname, so I'll just go with Andrea. Thank you for commenting. Prefetching resources can reduce largest contentful paint by loading images, scripts, and style sheets in advance, leading to faster rendering of the main content. Also can help load resources in a way that minimizes layout shift as elements are more likely to be rendered in their final positions when the user arrives at the page, it says in the actual comment, but it got truncated. Yeah, thank you. And hello, Elliot.
So can I ask something regarding the loading time? Because I know we all aim for faster. There's going to be like a limit to how fast we can actually, how much we can improve our loading times and how much there is to gain with improving loading times with tricks like this. Like Nathan said, when AI gets involved, it's going to be a bigger load environmentally, servers. And what are we gaining? Aren't we supposed to create sites and pages that are already quite fast? And is the difference not going to be like minimal with a massive impact on things where we don't want to be impact?
Yeah, that's kind of interesting, isn't it? So essentially, if every website is approximating zero page load time, obviously that first time you go there, the speculation can't do anything. But once the speculation has started to do its work, in theory, you're seeing things significantly quicker. What is the point at which we say, okay, we've got to move the goalposts for Lighthouse scores and things like that? Presumably, if this all takes off and everything is using speculation and loading in that way, Google will have to move the goalposts to make it even an even smaller amount of time to be the metric. And it's a bit like what I was saying, you know, at some point we'll have to be loading things before we've even decided we want to see them for it to be effective. I don't know what the answer to that is, Wendy. It's going to have to be instant, isn't it? Things are literally going to have to be. Have you ever, Wendy, been to a website that you've never visited before and you've clicked around it and it literally has been instant? Have you ever done that? You've just stumbled across a website which for some reason is just superbly optimized and you click, 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 and no matter how fast you do it, it's like bang, 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 bang. It is so profound.
It's probably that it makes
you, yeah, but it makes you realize that virtually nothing on the internet is as immediate as that, because when you encounter it, you really see it as, oh, whoa, that's really different. I think
this has got we're quite spoilt in the Western world with internet speeds. You know, it's just getting faster and faster and faster and faster. It's not unusual that I hear friends saying I've got a 10 gig fiber connection and it's insanely fast. But being a plugin developer, I also hear from people in other countries where the internet is not very fast at all, and something like this would probably be useful for them because it would, you know, slowly load the page in the background. Yeah. So when they click, it's going to have the content available to them. So, I mean, nowadays, I very rarely am I waiting for a website to load. And if it's maybe a second or two, Google Core Vitals will still complain about it no matter what.
Yeah.
People do get slightly obsessed with Core Vitals stuff. I think...
Is it possible this is like a nice kind of slightly helpful little feature, kind of hooks into some nice new technology that's coming, but on a normal WordPress release, this might be item 8 or 10 on the changelog.
Yeah.
Whereas it's not an earth-shattering change. We're just talking about it a lot more because this was a quiet release. Something had to be one of the top 1 or 2 features.
Well, that, Steve, is what you call a segue. Let's do just that. Nice, nicely done. I queued you up perfectly there. Because, so WordPress 6.8 dropped this week. And usually there's a lot of fanfare around it. And obviously, if you're inside the baseball of WordPress, it was probably still a big deal. But I think this release in particular has been overshadowed by the talk of it being the release of 2025. And I'll share a few articles in a minute. If you don't know what's going on, basically, it has been decided that for now, we're only going to get one major release per year. So 2025, this is it. WordPress 6.8 is it. There'll be updates for security and what have you. And again, we'll get to that in a minute. 2026, we'll have one. 2027, we'll have one, and so on. And so let's just go through what was released. Well, so I think this is leaning into what Steve was saying. Often you get a really packed release, but with the way that the project has had to align itself with a diminution in, I don't even know if that's a word. It came out of my mouth and then I thought, I have no idea if that's actually a word.
It is now.
Yeah, it is now.
I'll get my dictionary.
I'll go for reduction. Let's go for that. A reduction in the amount of people who are paid, especially from automatic, to contribute to core. Maybe this was a sort of more scaled back release. Let's put it that way. So here we go. These are the headline items. The style book gets a cleaner new look and a few little tricks. For example, it's got structured layout, cleaner labels. I'm just reading. Plus, you can now see it in classic themes as well if you've got the correct theme.json file enabled. So that's something. There's also a few things in the editor which have been improved. For example, there's more options around data views, and you can exclude sticky posts from the query loop. And here's the speculation loading. It's item number 3. So it was decided it was quite a big thing, but I think Steve's right. In a normal release, maybe that wouldn't have been quite such a big thing. Bcrypt is in use now to hash various different things on your WordPress website, which is less brute-forcible than mcrypt, which is what we used to have. And then there's a whole bunch of accessibility and other performance enhancements. And it says 100-plus accessibility enhancements touch on the broad spectrum of WordPress. It includes fixes for bundled themes, improvements to navigation menus, and more. And so, yeah, maybe, but that's it. That's the features that you're going to have, presumably, until about this time next year or at some point in 2026. Now, that makes you sort of wonder, okay, well, what are we going to do with the rest of 2025? And there's a couple of articles which kind of touch on this. The first one here is from the executive director of the WordPress project. I'm saying that as if that's true. That was Josepha's title. So I'm presuming that Mary Hubbard took on Josepha's title, being the executive director. Anyway, Mary Hubbard produced this piece a few days ago, and the new cadence for WordPress, in which she says, after releasing WordPress 3 times a year, a recent discussion with the core committers, we're making changes for now. Starting 2025, one release a year, and it will continue like that for the time being. And although I haven't highlighted it, it says this reflects the current realities, particularly the energy and resources being diverted due to the ongoing legal matters. And here's the interesting thing for me. If those lawsuits are dropped or resolved, we'll revisit this cadence and strongly consider returning to a 3 releases per year schedule. That remains the ideal for a fast-moving, community-driven project like WordPress. So it feels like this is the holding pattern that we're in. We don't want to be here. The leadership don't want to be on one release a year. They want to be on 3. I think I'm reading that right. Am I not? It's not like this.
Yeah, I think they're only going to do bug fixes, right? So there's going to be no code added, but they'll be modifying code if it needs to be fixed.
Yeah. And then WordPress 7 is on track for 2027, if that is indeed the case. Now. So this begs the question, how is this? How is this being received? I don't really deal with clients anymore, and I'm not sure if you guys are dealing with clients in a way that this would matter. But I imagine if you're, if you're making a decision about using WordPress, or you're tasked by your company to get yourselves a website, and here's some choices. We've got WordPress, we've got Drupal, we've got Wix, we've got Squarespace. I do wonder if these things are going to start to play on people's thoughts, like, oh, it's not under active development anymore. No new features. Well, that doesn't sound good. I mean, why?
I've never had that as a concern from a client. I mean, that's with the clients I work with. They come to me and say, Mark, what platform should I use? I say use WordPress, and I don't think they're that bothered about how frequent updates and stuff are. If it does the, I just launched a very, very large 6-figure website using WordPress, and we did a full site editing theme and everything else. And even through the drama that's been going on, there's been no mention of that from the client themselves. So.
Nice. I would imagine it is really people like you and I who are obsessing about WordPress who have even noticed it's going on.
Yeah, I feel it more in the community than I do outside, obviously.
It gives us something to talk about. However, that means, though, we are going to be more reliant upon the minor releases and what they mean. And I just want to point all the listeners to this episode towards this piece. Oh, I should probably put the screen on. There we go. This is Aaron Jorbin. Aaron, by the way, has the very nice first name. So if you scroll down to the list of contributors who make WordPress, Aaron always squeezes in right at the beginning. As far as I'm aware, it's basically always Aaron. There's a couple of Aarons, as you'll see, but Robert Shaw, doesn't get the first mention, Aaron. So well done for that. By the way, we should be thankful, shouldn't we, to these 900 contributors who made this happen. I forgot to say thank you to them. And he has written an article, Aaron, that is all about defining what WordPress releases, the minor releases, might be in the future, because he wants to get them right. And it boils down to, don't add new files. I'm just sort of reading. Adding new features is a good idea. Refactoring the code is probably not a good idea. And instead of adding new themes, why don't we just keep the old themes that we've had all these years and just chop patterns at them instead? So instead of releasing a 2026, why don't we just keep 2025, call it something else like Brian or something, and put loads of work into patterns instead? I think that's quite a novel idea. I like that. So anyway, there we go. That was Aaron, don't know. Jorbin's thoughts on what we need to do in the future with the theme. So any thoughts on WordPress 6.8 or the cycle or the releases? If you've got any thoughts, speak now.
It's tricky. And probably me and Mark have been in this situation as plugin developers that it's tricky to have the right cadence for new features. We've definitely gone through periods with some plugins. We've got like 15, 16 plugins in total over different projects, where sometimes you move really quickly and you're constantly changing or adding things for your users, and it can sometimes be hard for them to catch up, hard for the documentation and the videos you've created around it to catch up. And then other times a plugin might be left on the shelf for a year or 2 years and it gets stale, its features fall behind the rivals. It's a tricky business trying to get the right cadence where you're keeping fresh, you're keeping up with the competitors, and you're not overwhelming the users. And I don't know, maybe three releases a year was too much sometimes, and one release a year is maybe two is a, I don't know, it's a,
it, yeah, somewhere between one and three would be. What would that be? Yeah, I know what you mean, because obviously I've covered this for years, and it did feel like, you know, let's say 6.0 to 6.1 to 6.2 to 6, that felt like it came around really quickly. So 4 months didn't feel like long, because we really were, as soon as the release had dropped, the news was pushing out about the next release. So there wasn't really even time to sort of embed and teach the different features that have dropped. With this one, it feels like we're going to have a really long time with those features. And I like Aaron's idea that we want to put features in. That, like, if 6.8 represents a feature freeze, I think that wouldn't be a good look for WordPress. So having features dropping in these minor releases would be good, but obviously you've got to be, you know, slightly circumspect about the fact that a lot of people will have these updates switched on automatically, the minor releases, and so that might affect, you know, whether or not you want to push some new feature out to everybody all at once automatically. I don't know.
It means a lot more development gets pushed into the plugin space, right? For example, we do a lot of publishing. We've been talking a lot about the new comments feature that was coming in Gutenberg, that you'd have the block level comments, that like Google Docs, you could be adding
a
specific comment. I guess I was kind of expecting it to drop in this release, but it's going to be in the Gutenberg plugin for 2 years now.
That's gone very quiet, hasn't it? This whole phase thing. So we had phase one, which was Gutenberg, and then we had phase two, which was full site editing. There was so much. But now I haven't seen any conversation around collaboration for a while. And for a long time, that was being anticipated as the next big thing. And then obviously translating your website's phase four, that's not being talked about. And I think I would imagine that's off the cards for a little while now. Although there were some UI mock-ups of what that might look like and different implementations of, you know, whether it be a per block comment or what have you. But that seems to have gone very
quiet.
Ready.
It's in Gutenberg.
Okay.
If you want to install it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll take you back. Right. Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Steve. That's great.
And then I guess you've got other things like AI. Like these next 2 years, it's going to be transformational for the web, for AI. But WordPress is not going to have any new AI structural features in it. I see some work being done. Like there's a plugin whose name escapes me, which is basically trying to make a framework for all developers to...
Oh, I think it's the AI Bridge by Felix Arntz. Is it that one?
Yes, I believe so.
No, Pascal Birchler, maybe. I can't remember. One of those two. Anyway.
They might work together.
Basically trying to have one single resource for all AI plugins to connect to and maybe make WordPress a player in this space. I mean, so it's not going to happen in the core now. We're going to be looking to the plugin space very much for the creativity for things that might have gone in the core.
I'm just going to flip the subject back for a moment because WebAlogic is asking another question about what we were talking about just a moment ago. He says, is there such a thing as a plugin that will detect the visitor's internet connection speed to then serve them optimized content similar to detecting the device to serve mobile versions of pages? I don't know is the answer to that. Any of our panelists know of such a thing? It's quite a nice idea. No?
Yeah, I think the only way you can detect a browser speed is to actually measure it, which would involve downloading a block of data, which is probably going to slow down the website as it does it.
Yeah, right. Okay,
so I don't believe there's any HTTP header or anything like that.
Yeah.
That will tell you.
Also, the privacy of a website measuring my browser speed feels a bit iffy.
Icky. So we don't know is the answer, WebAlogic. Yeah. We don't think
probably not very reliable either.
No. It's a bit like when you go to the speed test sites and you do it twice within 2 minutes and it gets wildly different answers.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, how actually useful was that? And another plugin idea. joining us today.
Great. I'm gonna write these down.
Another plugin idea is to add the last updated date to the installed plugins page in the WordPress dashboard. Who checks the individual plugin to check it regularly? Most don't. I'm just trying to parse what does that relate to? Another plugin.
Oh, well, you may have a plugin that's not been updated in 4 or 5 years on your site.
Oh, I see. Okay, got it.
Yes, I've been reading that. I mean, there are 60,000 plugins in the thingy, and only 11,000 are regularly updated. So
really? Wow. Gosh, so is it? Wow.
There is a plugin out there that checks the last updated date because I had a customer come to me and say, I've just got a warning. I think it might have been WordFence or something like that. And they actually sent me a support ticket saying one of your plugins has been deemed out of date. And it basically because I wrote it and it works. It didn't need updating. It just worked.
Right.
So it hadn't been updated for like 2 years. And they deemed it basically out of use. So I literally had to just push a version with a number change in it to say, just to keep it a lot like, give it a nudge.
So the changelog went from 1.0.0 to 1.0.1 and the changelog said, updated plugin.
Updated readme.
Yeah, updated readme. That's great. I mean, I can see the utility of that, but equally that's just an utterly pointless thing. Yeah, because some of your add-ons, they do just connect one thing to another thing, don't they? So long as that connection works, there's no...
If the API doesn't change at the other end, there's no point me doing anything changes to it. So,
okay, that's interesting. Okay, so let's move on a little bit. So that was Aaron talking about the different ways that we might update and what might be updated. It's definitely worth reading. I didn't really do it justice there, but I'll just give you the title. So it is aaron.job.in. Don't know if you can see that, but I'll put the link in the show notes. And it's called x.y.z or z, defining minor releases for WordPress 6.8.x. And he goes on to, I mean, this is a guy who commits to core and he's very, very experienced, and he's got five thoughts about what it means for minor releases in the future, what should go in and what should probably just be left in the domain of, you know, just put it on the sidelines. Okay. All right. Felix Arntz, we were talking about him a moment ago. I just want to mention that in WordPress 6.8, not only did we have the features that we talked about, but a bunch of key work has been done on performance improvements. We did talk about speculative loading, so that's obviously there. But also, there's a whole bunch of different things around the interactivity API to make it work better in the future and some of the performance-related things. So, again, there's far too much in here for me to parse in this podcast. But if you just go to make.wordpress.org, WordPress 6.8 Performance Improvements by Felix Arntz, you'll be able to see all the different bits and pieces in there. Okay, right. This is the one I think which will be most interesting for this particular episode. I honestly don't know. Seriously, if you'd have asked me this question and talked about AI just 2 years ago, none of this would have made sense. But Brian Cords, who is now an automatician, but is a developer, he's been asking the question recently, are websites still important? And Brian is not the one, he's not the kind of character, I don't think, to just sort of throw incendiary topics out there just to see if he can get a rise. I think it's a serious question. And really, it's revolving around not are they relevant now? Because clearly, everybody's using websites, consuming websites, going to websites, updating websites. It's more about what the heck is going to happen over the next period of time where AI really, really genuinely does seem to be extremely capable in all sorts of ways. Now, I know that it might not get the accessibility right. I know you might have to argue, in inverted commas, with the AI in order to get it to do what you want to do. But just imagine 3 years ago, let's go with that. If I'd have told you that you could type in a prompt, an English language, whatever language prompt, a few sentences, and you would have something which would build you a website, you'd have thought, that's just BS, Wrigley. Shut up. That's never going to happen. And now we're there. So the question really is, are we in an industry which is going to be in decline? Not like it'll go away, not like the humans don't need to shepherd the AI, but are we, and he makes the perfect parallel, like how many farmers were there 100 years ago? And the answer is thousands, thousands and thousands. And then mechanization of farming came along, and now we can still produce the same amount of food, but we don't need many farmers, you know, just a handful. And so is the same going to be true here? And I know that we would like to imagine that no, humans are still going to be the central cog in that wheel. I am getting more and more convinced that they're not, that maybe we'll just be at a point where it's good enough for most people to talk to an AI. And if that's the case, I'm out of a job. I don't know what you think about this.
The type of website, though. Like, we're talking about, are websites still going to be important? First of all, AI, as we know it, probably wouldn't exist if there weren't websites here currently. That's where it digests all of its content from. If we get rid of the websites, AI is going to have nothing to chew on. I think the way we digest information has certainly changed, whereas, you know, we used to go to, like, Stack Overflow to ask it a question about maybe a programming question. Now we can just go on OpenAI and get a response from it. But things like, I don't know, small businesses, if I want to find a gardener or I want to go to a restaurant and I want to see what the restaurant looks like and stuff like that, at the moment, I still want a website to go and have a look at that and read the reviews about it and see what it looks like.
Yeah.
So I guess it depends on the type of business. On the argument about, you know, are we going to need web developers to build these websites? I think the...
Sorry, I'll just point out, I had mutton vindaloo earlier and my stomach's really going. It's actually when it's Wendy's dog. It's not my stomach. Sorry, Paul. Mark. Carry
Paul.
On. Yeah. Who even is?
On the building of the sites. Sadly, I'm seeing that AI is kind of encroaching more and more on those kind of brochureware websites, certainly. Interestingly, I think there was a podcast mentioned in that article, but they were talking about, enterprise versus kind of smaller $5,000 websites and stuff. I think the enterprise stuff has got a long way to go before AI encroaches on that. I think the process that I just went through on the website I was building, AI is helpful, 100%, but with their very specific styling guidelines and integrations they have with third party, I mean, behind the scenes, it's just a mash of enterprise level stuff. That's definitely going to be something that you still need an agency for. Mm. But I don't know. I think
isn't the argument kind of curious that, like, the agencies can exist because the environment in which they live is what it is now? But if the bottom gets hollowed out, then can you even have an enterprise agency without there being loads of other, like you need agencies that are smaller, if you like, so that they can train the people who will then become the, and I'm doing air quotes, the capable developers that can then start to take jobs in these enterprise agencies because they've had years of experience and blah, 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 blah. But if those kind of, the bottom rung of the ladder agencies disappear and those kind of jobs disappear, where are you going to cut your teeth? Where are you going to figure out how to do all of this?
To get the experience, you've got to do that smaller stuff.
Yeah, and you've got to get paid to do that smaller stuff, haven't you? You've got to do the entry-level job. And so if those kind of things disappear, it feels almost like it's such a beguiling promise, isn't it? You type in a prompt, and it gives you a website, and it's great. It's really great, but it's not.
Have you actually done that?
I've seen people do it. I'm not interested in AI on that level, so I never do that because I don't. But I don't know if any of you guys have tried it. And
because I tested some options, especially some website builder options, where they say, "Hey, so I'm seeing." This is might be a little bit off topic, but okay. I'm seeing WordPress move more towards SaaS, where the hosting companies offer like managed WordPress environments and they include a website builder AI thingy. And you type in the industry you're in and where you're located and what the vibe is you want, and then they create a website for you. And I've tested some, but so far, they're not really that good. And they do require like a human touch also, because they kind of all get the same thing.
Yeah, I see this. I've tried. It's clever. I mean, I see it spitting out some
quality stuff.
But it's not anything that I would just go publish and use. It definitely would require me putting some human touch on there to make it what I want. Robert in the comments asked an interesting question about, what if you're letting AI pick the restaurant based on what you like? Mm. I mean, it's just a whole new mindset, isn't it? Just trusting AI to pick your date with your wife.
But haven't you done wrong. Exactly that, though, with so many bits of your life? Like, even though we don't want to admit it, haven't we already outsourced our brains a lot to, like, not AI, but to tech? So a perfect example would be my calendar. If Google Calendar went away tomorrow and deleted all my data, I have no idea what I'm doing at all, including the things that, I really should know, like when I'm going out to the gym to see friends, this kind of thing. It's just all in Google Calendar. And I'm just waiting for that little, I'm supposed to be doing that in a couple of days. Oh, that's nice. I'm glad I'm doing that. But we've given it all up, haven't we? We've let technology take on, like, we've outsourced our brain, basically. And if you want to go to a restaurant, do you ever pull out some kind of physical material like the yellow pages to flick through and find a variety of restaurants, then phone a couple of. No, you go straight to Google or TripAdvisor or something like that. And it's like, that looks pretty good. It's got a 4.8 rating with 900 reviews. Let's go for that. So I'm not sure.
And then we read reviews that we can't even trust, probably. They've probably been written by AI anyway. But,
So I think we're well on the road to giving up our agency, if you like, even though we don't wish to kind of admit it. We've done
will
it.
Will that mean our heads will shrink?
I thought you mean yeah. My head is prodigiously empty, Wendy, already. So
still quite big though. So what's in there, Nathan?
I have to do this annual filling it up with cotton wool. I just push cotton wool in on Christmas Day just to fill up the empty space. It's an annual event. It's great ceremony. I don't know, but here's the flip side though, and I don't know it. My understanding of all of this is so paltry that anything I'm about to say could be completely wrong. My understanding also is that there is a fair amount of concern from the AI bros, for want of a better word, because the capacity to make AI with the LLM structure better is going to become very, very much more expensive. To get a 1% improvement now is significantly more than it was to get a 20% or 30% improvement a few years ago. So it's kind of like AI kind of did, you know, it was like this and then it went like this and now it's going more like this again. And I've heard that the cost of improving the models that we already have is going to be significant, like really crazily expensive, not just in terms of finance, but also in terms of the resources and the degradation to the environment and all of that. And so maybe we're going to be fine.
I saw something this morning. I don't know whether it was a meme or whether it was real or if it was actually a news article, where there's somebody saying that people saying please and thank you in ChatGPT is costing them a fortune.
Oh, because there's just a needless prompt saying thank you.
Yeah, you and don't they've need got a reply. To be polite to your ChatGPT.
Okay.
But they said it was costing him millions in resources.
That's hysterical. So be rude to your LLM.
Just be rude, yeah.
Yeah, just be thoughtless.
Sorry,
Steve, go on.
Do you mind doing me a quick favor? No. Nathan, can you bring up the original question, the original blog post?
Here we go. It was the tabs. This one here. Yeah.
I wonder, so the title was, are websites still important? It seems like there's two separate questions. Like, are websites still important in the era of AI? And then the other question is, are we still important when it comes to websites? Like, question one is, are websites still going to be around? Are people still going to need websites? And then question two, are humans actually going to be really involved in building them? Those seem like question two, are we still going to be involved? I think you're probably right in terms of the farmers, right? They're going to be less human involvement. Maybe we'll be more of the enterprise at the high end of things. And then quite a lot of conversations I've had recently are the actual physical websites that result, whether they come from AI or whether they come from humans, are those actual physical websites still going to be useful in 5 or 10 years' time? And that's, they seem like two different questions, I think. And both of them probably are how much of our work is going to get sucked up by AI.
I know what you mean. So a perfect example is the iPhone moment, right? Prior to the iPhone, the operation of going and discovering things online was sit at a computer and have a keyboard and then type things in and, you know, go to a website and what have you. Then the iPhone came along and suddenly it was in everybody's pocket and it was ubiquitous and it's there all the time. And also it's just got this really curious screen shape. And not only has that like completely changed the photography industry where everybody stopped doing it, by the way, everybody, everybody takes pictures that way round. Turn it around and then take the picture, please. Thank you. You get so much more in, especially if you're doing landscapes. Stop ranting, Wrigley. But
depends on what you're looking for, Nathan.
Well, I know. But the point being that that device, the iPhone, completely upended what the internet even was. And we don't know what's going to come. There might be some device which gets plugged into your head, or something which, you know, is a bolt onto my glasses, or, you know, something along those lines. And I am less and less going to websites and more and more just the search engine. I have totally outsourced my you know, I type into Google, navigate to this place. I don't need to go to their website to find out their location and the latitude and longitude. Google just is the intermediary for that. If I want to see reviews, I will go via Google to somewhere else. And I don't really know where I'm going with that. But what I'm saying
you're kind of basically taking the points I had, was whether websites physically themselves are going to be useful in the future. Like, they could be done by us. They could be done by agencies. It could be done by freelancers. Could be done by AI. But at the end of the day, does it matter if, like you say, we're not actually visiting websites anymore?
Yeah, so a perfect analogy would be, like, when was the last time any of us lot looked in an encyclopedia to find something out?
What?
An encyclopedia. you know, you just didn't. Whereas when I was a kid, that was the method of looking things up. If it was something I didn't need to know, I went to the encyclopedia. And if it didn't have it, I was basically screwed. Now, you don't think, like, nobody's got an encyclopedia, even. You just rely on the internet, Wikipedia, whatever, all of those kind of things. And maybe there'll be something which will come along in the future. And Brian's point about, is a website even needed? Don't know. I think we're all aiming for the conduit of information. Like, basically, give me the answer first time when I ask a question. That seems to be the goal of the internet now. It's not like, let's serve up web pages. It's, I have a question, give me an answer, make it right first time around. And if that is, if I can get that 99% of the time, I'll be happy. That's not what I want to see, but that is, I think, the direction of travel. Yeah.
You know, so, we could all go back to farming if we had to.
yeah, that's right.
The number of farmers is going back up again.
Yeah, that's
it.
I like farmers.
Yeah, me too. I want to start a farming podcast now.
I think it's a bit like when we went from, you know, the postal service was always worried about email, wasn't it, back in the day? Like, we're never going to send mail again. But now we use mail for Amazon packages instead of letters to our friends. It just, there's a continual evolution of how data is used and perceived by people. And I think it's like a library as well. Like, you know, when's the last time I went to a library to go reference a book? I don't. It's all online now. So is the next natural progression for that now to be sucked up by these AI companies, and that's where we get our information from now. It's kind of scary, isn't it?
Well, it's scary, but also I think history is a bunch of cycles, isn't it? And things that unexpectedly, or rather things that it would seem were going to be the natural course of events get upended. And often it's by an individual with a clever idea. Mm. And it wouldn't surprise me if there was at some point some kind of, not revolution, but something akin to that, where people just said, I am absolutely sick and tired of being plugged into electronic devices. I want to be more connected with my local farmer and my garden and the people that live within 150 meters of my house. And I don't really want to be worried about dude over there in a completely different continent because he's loud on Twitter. I don't know if that will come, but there's definitely bits of my life where I think that would be a nice place to get to. If, you know, if I could shut down the internet entirely for a period of time, that would be quite nice.
I think the thing I like right now is if I do ask, say, ChatGPT a question, I can see it going off and searching the web for content. So it's definitely referencing the web.
Yeah.
I don't like the idea of all that content being in their system. But, you know, the internet right now is distributed across the world, right? So you've got lots of different people managing that information. Whereas if it's all in OpenAI or some other AI system, they've got all that data in one pot. And, you know, who says what they can do with it?
Sorry, Steve or Wendy, whichever.
No, Steve, go for it.
Go for Wendy.
Thank you.
We do a published press podcast and basically talk with publishers who worry about this a lot because their social traffic is going down and their Google traffic is going down and they're getting squeezed quite badly by AI at the moment, and this topic keeps on coming up. And perhaps the best insight we've had is from one guest who said, basically, right now you need to decide very clearly whether you are building your website for AI. Like, for example, here at Publish Press, we put all our documentation publicly. We really want AI to come and suck up all our documentation. So if someone types in, what's the best user role management plugin for WordPress, it'll give our plugin as the answer. You got two lanes, basically the AI lane or the lane where you are capturing that audience. You are getting them in a newsletter. You are getting their sign up and you are owning that relationship as tightly as you possibly can. And if you're kind of half-assing it in between those two options, you're going to be in trouble. So either your website is entirely designed to be sucked up and optimized for AI, or you're trying to get email addresses, trying to get a customer relationship tight enough that that if social media traffic keeps dropping and Google traffic keeps dropping, you'll still have their email, you'll still have their relationship, you'll still have something valuable left over.
That's really interesting, isn't it? Yeah. So making the email suddenly like the first citizen, you're not even worrying particularly about your website. It's more
website, newsletter.
Yeah. Okay. Gosh, that's fascinating. Yeah. I wish I had the answer to this. I really don't, but I think it is a profound moment. I think there's so much happening at such scale that...
What was the first thing you pitched at the beginning of the episode? You were like, here's our website, sign up for our newsletter.
Yeah. That stuff is magic. Like having an email newsletter is actually amazing because you to call it a conversation is overdoing it, but you are putting something directly into people's inboxes because they want to read it. How that would work for, you know, I don't know, if I was casually looking for a new sofa or something, it's quite unlikely that I'd end up signing up to a sofa manufacturer's newsletter or something. But that's where you'd want the AI capturing it so that if I went to ChatGPT and that's interesting.
Wouldn't you want to touch it? Like buying sofas or stuff, wouldn't you want to touch it?
Yeah.
With all the digital stuff, AI is great. But buying a sofa, I want to feel what it is to lay on it. If the ratio of the side thing to combine to my head shoulder, if I lay like this, like the perfect height, I need to feel that. And I need to feel if the pillows are able to carry me. And so for me, I mean, I am excited. I use AI a lot. There are two things that are super worrying for me. It is, one thing is that human connections, we can't do without. We are people. We need like human connections. And we keep forgetting that that is the thing that we live by. There are so many things that are indicating that we are losing the human connection, and it is scary. It is frightening, and it is super scary. And the other thing I want to point out is if we trust AI or Google or whoever to handle all our questions, who owns the information?
Yeah.
Because I want my information to be owned by me. And I want the sofa company to own its own information to send me the newsletter about the amazing cushions they created to go with my newly purchased couch and to my local farmer to tell me that now is strawberry season and I should buy strawberries and not go with, I don't know, blackberries because their season is in the fall. So there is some basic human stuff that is that AI is never able to, or for now and not within the coming years, is not able to recreate or to replace in the way that we as people interact. And the other thing is, which is extremely scary because nobody's talking about it. Well, there are a few people, but not many. And it's not like the big people conversation. Who owns the information and who owns the data?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wendy, is that kind of directly inspiring your Love Doctor work?
Yes.
That feeling of isolation, of of lack of human connection is directly fueling that work?
Yes, because I am a neurodiverse person. When I started it, I have had so much trouble in learning to connect. I am not the founder of The Love Doctor. That is my business partner. Her name is Inga. She founded it because she believed that there is so much information about how to connect, to connect with at an interpersonal level, to connect with other people. There is so much information. There is so much research being done. You see, I'm getting super excited. I'm jumping over my own words. And it's not available for common public. You can get access to it when you study for example, psychology, or if you start having therapy, which for a lot of people is still a big threshold thing to do. So that kind of information, the way we interact with people, the importance of relationships, it needs to be more common information because we need it, especially in this technology era where it is getting a smaller part in our lives. I mean, before it was just you walked out the front door and there was somebody and you talked to them and then you knew the gossip in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And now you look on X and you see what's going on the other side of the ocean, but you don't know who your neighbors are, which is extremely dangerous for us as people.
I remember reading history books about Holland, actually, about this amazing thing, the tulip revolution, where the entire world just wanted to buy tulips, and tulips went up by a crazy amount so that tulips were worth more than gold, until basically something happened, I can't remember what it was, and everybody just sort of suddenly figured out, it's just tulips. Wait, what have we been doing for these decades? We've been spending crazy amounts of money, and then it just collapsed. And I wonder if we've kind of reached or are reaching peak internet, where, you know, there are aspects. I mean, it's been a fascinating journey. You know, the devices come along, they're more impressive than they were last year. They've got great utility. They speed things up and they're bound to the internet and you reach all these people. But maybe we are just getting the sort of glimmer that, oh, hang on a minute, it gives us all this, but it takes away all this. And maybe there'll be a point where we, as a species, we sort of say, look, better to disconnect now and have dedicated downtime. I know that, for example, in certain countries, I think Australia, they are banning social media for people who are under the age of 16. Now, if I've misremembered that, I apologize, but I think that's true. And so it's been decided, I guess, I don't know, presumably a bunch of politicians decided it, that 16-year-olds, you can wait until you're 17. You know, from that moment on, you've still got thousands of hours to waste on TikTok, but let's just inoculate them until they're 17, what have you. And I do wonder. I think it'll be interesting. And you're right. You know, we don't tend to know our neighbours, and we don't tend to know what's going on in our local environment, which is a bit of a shame.
I think it's I think it's interesting just watching our children. I mean, yep. They're a good indicator of where things are going. And my kids, it's a digital lifestyle they've got. But yep. I must say, my eldest has now started driving, and he loves going out and just seeing his friends and interacting. I think that he's still very, very, very social. When they're back at home, they're on all these chat things, but they still love getting together, which is nice to see. You know, I was the same when I was a kid. I was out on my bike with my friends, and I think Wendy's right that social interaction is so important.
I don't know if it's the same in the US as it is in the UK, but basically the drinks industry, the alcohol industry, is a bit concerned because the demographic, the people that are growing up into being the age to drink, which in the UK is 18. They are increasingly in huge numbers just shunning drinking at all. They just don't want to do it. It's not a thing. And I wonder if something like that could happen. Well, Steve, go on.
There is a positive. I think it's positive because you always talk a lot of doom and gloom about, we tend to be like old man yelling at cloud kind of attitude to a lot of these things. But, with the phones, I don't know whether this is good or bad. The kids, I've got teenagers similar to Mark, similar age, who are, their generation is so well behaved. Like they drink a lot less, they smoke less, they get in trouble less, they go out less, they drive less. That by lots of like social markers, they are getting in less trouble than we did, our generation did, because they're on their home, on their phone more.
Right, they don't have any chance to get into trouble.
Maybe I don't know whether that's good or bad, but it is substantially different from our generation when we were growing up.
Definitely a different generation. I went back to my university in Brighton last December, I think it was, and I went out with my friend. We both went to the University of Brighton, and we went to a bar, and I expected to go in this bar and see all these kids drinking and, you know, being silly. They were all sat down doing a pub quiz, and they had an app they had installed. And on a TV screen were some rabbits, I think it was, that were running across the screen. And the speed at which the rabbits went was directly proportional to how quickly you tapped your iPhone screen. And we're sitting, both of us having a beer, and I was just like, this is a completely different generation. And I spoke to the bar lady who was serving us, and she said, yeah, this is completely different to 20 years ago. That is a completely new generation. They just don't drink. She said they come in, and they are drinking orange juice and water. They're appreciative that they're coming in, but they are not drinking the way we used to.
Very different. Yeah, we definitely sort of got away from the do we need websites kind of conversation, but it's been fascinating. But no. But I do think what we've just sort of strayed into, this whole alcohol, you know, buying drinks and or not buying drinks, as the case may be. I do wonder if the youths will kind of rebel against it, whether they're, you know, they're going to be able to, because I mean, let's face it, we're all to some extent, we are addicted probably to social media. That is now, in the same way that if you have smoked a lot in your life, even if you've given up, I suspect you have to be mindful that if you have another cigarette, it is going to get a screwdriver into your brain differently to somebody that hasn't ever smoked before, who'll probably just think, oh, that's disgusting. But the same may be true for us. You know, we've all kind of just given up on the social media thing. We've done it. We're kind of addicted to it. We've made loads of friendships. So there's just a sunk cost. There's loads of sunk cost in it. But the kids who are coming up, maybe they won't even just get involved in it. And those platforms, you know, the Facebooks and the Twitters and what have you, maybe they'll sort of fade away, and all of these problems that we've got now will be different. So that doesn't answer the question about websites, but sadly, you know.
Well, I guess the answer is we don't know how these things are going to turn out for our kids for the next generation. But there's a desire among a lot of them, I think, to be more offline. Like this weekend, I took my kid shopping, and what she wanted to buy was one of those old cameras that you would take a photo and it would print a Polaroid, print out.
Yeah.
Like her and her friends are all into actually having a physical hard copy of the photos. And there's a desire, but at the same time, you know, this stuff is so addictive that after we did that, she went back and she was on her phone for a couple of hours afterwards.
Look at her websites.
Yeah, that's right. You can imagine a sort of science fiction movie in the future, can't you, where they're looking back at the moment in time, you know, in the early 2020s. Humans did this to themselves, and, you know, there's just like everybody was addicted to the phone. Yeah, curious bit of history. I am so sorry if you've been posting comments. There's quite a few people have been posting comments. I couldn't figure out a way to sort of segue and bring them in, so I'll just do a couple of them now. Definitely want a physical connection, says Dave Dunn. Nowadays, it's all online. Yeah, my impression is that that cannot be sustained.
Can I say one thing regarding physical connection? Because we have WordCamp Europe coming up, that was why I wanted to pitch it. Because
Segway.
Yes, and we still have tickets available. So if you are looking for a physical connection to meet and hug and greet and chat and hang and eat food and share fun and laughter with your WordPress buddies, Basel is the place to be.
Yeah, but you got to buy them on a website, though.
You need to buy the ticket on a website.
You got to buy them on a website, thank you for the comment. Thank you, Wendy. That was the perfect segue. That was literally what I was teeing up. That was ideal. Speaking of growing an email list, Webologic is saying, the money, for want of a better word, is still in the list. That's still a very effective way to go. And then on the drinks thing, talking about the, you know, people drinking less. Yes, on the drinks thing, says Ross. Hello, Ross. I have some hope that kids will rebel and shun social media and harmful parts of the internet. Yeah, I have that hope as well. Whether or not it happens, I don't know.
Someday.
And by the way, that's nice. If Wendy's reading the comments, I have such a good memory of you, Wendy, giving an amazing talk at probably WordPress. At WordCamp London, must be about 8
years ago. Yeah, it was 2017, my first ever WordPress WordCamp talk, and I cried during my talk, which was, it was also about human connection. So even back then, I was already involved in all this stuff. Yeah.
Carswell's coat, that's a great handle. The collapse of LLMs will be interesting to watch, won't it? It'll be like watching Terminator or something. It'll be a moment that we all probably enjoy with great relish. And there's a bunch of other things. So I appreciate anybody that made a comment. So back to WordCamp Europe. It's happening in Basel in the next month or so. Still got about 5 or 6 weeks from the 5th to the 7th of June. Basel, by the way, so here we go, back to the internet and using Google to do all the things. I ended up, you know, like you do when you want to see what a place is like, you go to Google Maps and then you sort of drop the little man somewhere and just like have a look around and think, oh, that looks nice. Basel is mile after mile of cool. It just looks, I had no idea that
it's so nice. I was there last month for the last venue visit to do the last check of everything.
Okay.
It's such a nice place. It has like this river in the middle of the city, and it was March and it was pretty cold, so there was no, there were people walking around. They just had the carnival, so basically everybody had a hangover. So it was not very busy while we were there, but I can imagine when the weather is better. I heard people swimming in the river, but also Tara's sitting outside having a beer or a non-alcoholic drink. It is such a nice place to be. It is. And it's not that big, so it's really, really WordCamp friendly. You can hang around, you can just wander the town. It is actually a really good place to.
I was really impressed when I dropped the pin. I just, nobody's ever mentioned Basel to me before, so dropping the pin and having a look around, I thought, whoa, that looks.
I'm looking forward to it. It's gonna be cool.
Yeah, me too. So that's happening soon. So there we go. So that was that. And then we're in a bit of a rush now. I'll just raise a couple of quick things. I don't know if you saw this one. In order to make us more angry about the internet, wouldn't it be a good idea to inject some more adverts into your WordPress admin? Some ingenious company, if this is true, I'm looking at a Twitter post, obviously caveat emptor, who knows where the heck it's come from. But it would appear that some ingenious plugin developer has figured out that if you install their plugin, they can then hijack when you go to add new plugins. They can insert their own products at the top of the list. What the heck?
It's not new, right?
Oh, is it
Jetpack? No, Jetpack, WooCommerce, SiteGround.
They all do it already.
Yeah.
I did not know that. Okay. So it's not new, but anyway, it would appear to be spreading and causing ire. I've never noticed it, to be honest, with things like Jetpack. So maybe it's just been doing that to me for years and I've never seen it. Anyway, there we go. So that was a non-story. Next one then, a couple of updates about some plugins and things like that. Generate Blocks 2.1, Kathy Zant, who's often on the show, she's written an article about all the nice new things that have dropped into GeneratePress. I am an absolute fan of this product, GeneratePress. is such a great way to use blocks to build out posts, pages, you know, entire websites, basically. It's brilliant. And 2.1 has added loads of new features specifically around being able to identify whether or not your CSS, where it's coming from, because in the block editor, it's hard to figure out where the cascade is and, you know, what's inheriting things from what. So they've come up with this sort of, almost like a traffic light system for showing whether something's global or local or inherited or what have you. So it's quite nice. And so go and check that out. Don't know why you would want to do this, but you can now do this. There is a plugin called the WordPress Playground Block where you can drop in a WordPress Playground install inside of a post or a page. Actually, I just...
You have like an infinite loop of playgrounds.
That's right.
Inside playgrounds. Inside playgrounds. Playgrounds.
Yeah, it never ends. It's playgrounds all the way down. I've just thought of a good example, and that might be, for example, let's say, I don't know, a teacher in front of a class of 30 students wants them to all try something out. They could just drop a playground link into this page, direct them to the URL, and all the students are off to the races. Yeah, so they don't have to go and type in the weird URL to get a new playground. I mean, it's not that weird. I think it's new.playground.something. I can't remember what it is. But anyway, the point is this will make that a whole lot easier. So there we go. There's that. I'm just going to race through a few things. This I really like as well. Troy Chaplin has, I think it's something I've not seen before. It's got very few installations at the moment. It's only 10, so I don't know how credible it is. But it's called Block Accessibility Check, and it will poll against your core WordPress blocks to check if they are sticking to accessibility guidelines. Again, caveat emptor, I don't know how useful this actually is, but it will give you warnings based upon whether or not, I don't know, for example, you've set the area attributes for various things, or if your button isn't done in the perfect, or your table doesn't have a header or something like that, which is a requirement. So that's called Block Accessibility Check. So that's quite nice. Now I'll move on from that as well. And just in case he's watching, Elliot Richmond, he's often in the comments, just want to point out, we see you and your culinary business, which you've got going on the side. I had no idea. I mean, I don't know Elliot particularly well, but it was kind of weird. I was browsing the internet the other day and there's Elliot like doing cooking. And I thought he was only a developer. And it turns out he's got a really successful COVID-inspired hustle with his wife. So I just wanted to acknowledge that. Thought that was nice.
Looks delicious.
Looks delicious.
And yeah, then I want pieces.
Yeah, I want pieces. And let's do this as the, let me just check. Yeah, let's do this as the last one because we're really running out of time. Super cool, vert.sh. You know when you want to convert like a JPEG to a WebP or an MP4 to an MP3 or a whatever. You've normally got to Google something, find the website or have a piece of software locally installed that will do that. Vert is your new best friend. It will convert anything to anything else. You know, you see on the screen here, JPEG to WebP, MP3 to, I don't know, MWA. It'll do doc to EPUB, that kind of thing. And it does it all in the browser. So it's not sending anything off to a SaaS service. It's, I'm guessing it's using, I don't know, WebAssembly. Somebody like Mark or Steve could probably help me out, but I imagine it's using some technology like that. And it does it without ads. It's completely open source, and apparently it says done on your device. So I just thought that was a nice one to finish us off. So go and convert all the things.
That's right.
Vert.sh. There we go. And that then brings us to an end. I think that's about it. Let's have a look. Any new little things going on in the comments? Very nice. Steven says that generate press is cool. Yeah, very cool product indeed. Indeed. And there we go. That'll be the comments for this week. In which case, it only remains for me to say thank you. I'll start with Wendy. Thank you, Wendy, for joining us today. Really appreciate it. Thank you, Mark, as well. And where's he gone? Steve. Steve as well. We will be back, I think, this time next week. It only occurred to me, Mark and Steve, you'll know that it's bank holiday today. Because my brain is prodigiously empty, it only occurred to me this morning that this show probably shouldn't have happened because it's my holiday and everything is shot and I should be.
But you are showing to the world and it's not a bank holiday everywhere.
So. That's right. Exactly. You see,
hey, me and Mark are in the US. It doesn't mean anything over here. Bank holidays.
Yeah, it doesn't mean anything over here.
We work it every day of the week in the
US. I'm on a mission to remove bank holidays. We work far too little in the UK. We should have no days off. That's it. That's all we got for you this week. I appreciate it. We've only got to do the silly hand thing first before we say goodbye. If you could give us all your silly hands, that would be great. Nice. Thank you very much. And thank you to you, dear listener, for making some comments. I really appreciate it. And you three, if you want to stick around and have a little bit of a natter, we can do that afterwards. But I will end the recording. Bye-bye for now. And bye, Wendy's dog, as well.
By winning.
nice to have you with us as well.